And the Kol Dodi was appreciating that the breaking of the Luchos by Moshe Rabbeinu and the emphasis of the importance of that event at the end of the Torah and Parshas Tos Habracha, Rashi pointed out, makes that one of the highlights of Moshe Rabbeinu's career, so to speak. So what that was meant to convey to us is that Moshe Rabbeinu had a dual message to convey to the people. That the Galus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's seen through his mastery of nature and the universe, through Nisim and Flows, the Makos, splitting the sea, everything that took place in the Midbar. Okay, that's one reason for us to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of awe. And that is one way to inspire our Avodas Hashem. But we also have to appreciate the smashing of the Luchos. That one motivating factor in our Avodas Hashem also has to be the dangers of what happens when we don't live up to where we're supposed to be. When the expectations that are set through Torah Mitzvos, we don't live up to. Question is, if that was trying to drive home how serious a chait is, and how much we have to stay away from an avera, and right, what was the emphasis? That the luchos were ma'aseh Elokim. They were written by God. They were formed by God. So Moshe Rabbeinu broke the unbreakable. He smashed the unsmashable. Okay, that was l'mayel min ha-teva, the fact that these luchos could even be broken. Again, exemplifying the fact that the koch of chait is so great that it even extends to have implications and ramifications in the supernatural world in a way which defies our own natural state of affairs, and he explains as follows: why don't we feel that impact of chait? Why don't we feel the danger of chait? So he illustrates with the following. He says the same thing in two different parts of the Sefer. I mean, we'll try to read each one of them because they offer a knach, but the message is the same. There's a Gemara Nazir. You may be familiar with this. Rashi quotes this in Parshas Matos. Parshas Matos starts off with the laws of Nadarm, right? The person takes a vow. Who has the ability to nullify the vow?
Father
or the husband. The father if the girl is young enough. But if she's married, then it is in the husband's domain to nullify it. So the one has the following case. Pasuk tells you, Isha hafiram Hashem yislach lo. The husband hears about the vow that the woman made. He's not so happy with it. And he nullifies it, v'Hashem yislach lo, and Hashem will forgive her. What happened over here? The pasuk is almost hard to just read pashut. Let's say she makes a neder, I'm not going to eat pizza. Okay, I'm just making something up. So he has a right to nullify that vow. So if he does, and then she goes ahead and eats pizza anyway, so the Torah says, Hashem yislach lo, Hashem will forgive her. What do you mean Hashem will forgive her? The husband came along, he nullified the vow, there's nothing left. Right? She didn't hear that the husband had nullified the vow. So what is Hashem forgiving her for? So the Gemara says, you see from here, that even if the vow was nullified, she didn't know about it, and she went ahead and ate the pizza thinking that there was some reason that she couldn't, she still needs to do tshuva for it. Tzricha kaparas slicha. And then the Gemara relates the following story. When Rabbi Kiva would get to this pasuk, Hayabocha, he would start to cry. Just like this woman who tried to eat something which was treif, the pizza, and it ended up, by the time she ate it, it was kosher pizza. She still needs to do tshuva, she still needs kabar slicha. How much more so, Rahman al-Islam, someone who intends to eat something treif and does taki eat something treif, chas v'shalom, al-achz v'kam, how much more so is that person in trouble? How much more so is that person in need of kapar and slicha and has to do tshuva? When a person does an avera and is very well aware of the circumstances and is indeed violating the avera, so Rabbi Kiva would cry. What was he crying about? He was crying because seemingly, whether individually or on behalf of Klal Yisrael, there was a recognition of the tuma, the impurity, the defilement that results from chait, the breaking of the relationship, the violation of the relationship with Hashem when avera is violated, and he would cry. When was the last time that a person, you forget about doing an avera, you heard about a hypothetical situation about someone doing an avera, and you cried? Did anyone cry when we were reading the story before, 2 minutes ago? No. So just the notion that someone could do an avera was so traumatic for him that he started to cry. So why don't we feel that? Why don't we feel that breaking of the luchos that happens every time a person does an avera? So he gives the following mashal. Two mashal, let's start with this one. He says, imagine for a second, a Yehudi, Yoreh Shamayim, medaktik, bakal v'chamura, observant Jew, does his best to keep all the mitzvos. He's walking down the street, he's traveling, he's on a journey, and he's going on for days and days and days, and all of a sudden, Now, don't try this at home, but just to read you his mashal, okay? Hu holech bedarko shalei v'shanan. He's walking down the street, peaceful, very content. Ma'ashen sigari la hana aso. Okay? Don't need to translate. He's smoking a cigarette as he goes. He's enjoying himself. That's his illustration of the guy who's minding his own business on the derech. And then the guy next to him who's traveling with him all of a sudden hits him over the head and says, "What's the matter with you? Don't you know it's Yom Kippur today?" And the guy's sitting there smoking a cigarette, totally unaware of Yom Kippur. If that guy would drop on the floor, faint immediately upon hearing that, it wouldn't surprise us, right? You woke up one day, you just had no awareness of Yom Kippur, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my gosh, right? Okay, maybe not all of us would faint, but it wouldn't surprise you. It wouldn't surprise you. Like, you know, the shock of, oh my gosh, I totally forgot. He said that guy, whether he faints, he doesn't faint, will never forget that event for the rest of his life. Every Yom Kippur, he's going to wake up in the morning and think, like, you know, shaking a little bit, okay? And it'll stay with him. He'll do vidu in the morning, in the afternoon, an accidental event, the mistake of the Avera, that will never leave him. But that's a shogeg. That's story number one. Story number two, let's say a person intentionally takes a dig, insults a friend, not so friendly, okay? Insults another person, does something mean to that person. Right, what do we know about that? Person insults a friend, embarrasses him in public. You can bring all the karbonos in the world. You can bring a million karbonos. Doesn't help. Doesn't do anything. Yom Kippur, year after year, doesn't do anything. Ein b'kokshuv l'chaper, Yom Kippur can't atone, and all of the suffering that you could experience won't totally wipe away the avera. Atshirat l'chaver, until you walk over and you apologize and you get a legitimate forgiveness from him. Ha'im Yizkru has also Ma'ase Yosem Yireg Kamar. Let me ask you: does that even leave an impression? You say something insulting, you embarrass the guy in public, you walk away. A million Yom Kippurs and a million karbonos aren't going to do anything, right? You don't faint like the guy who forgot it was Yom Kippur. What happened? Rabbi Kiva's crying. What about us? One more example. In the middle of Shabbos Suda, and a person on the other side of the table yells, "Borer!" Klum gam oz yeshno chashash yigiyad kei lafon. Is the guy going to faint? Oh my gosh! I took the psalms from the ochel. What was I doing? No. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So he says the explanation is very simple. And this is the key, at least the starting point for tshuva this time of year. He says, think about it. What's the difference? Hachilok hu pasha. The difference is very obvious. As Yom Kippur adayin lo chilam apam. Hopefully, we've gone 20 years of our lives and never once violated Yom Kippur. We've always done our utmost and tried our utmost to keep every single day on Yom Kippur. It's a serious day. So the severity of the halacha is still something which burns brightly and strongly within our neshama. Now, how many times have we insulted someone? Don't answer that. You know, a friend of mine once said, I don't know if we should put this on Yahrzeit Torah, but just a horror to think about. Yeah? He said, he mentioned this a number of years ago when there's a lot of talk about half Shabbos, texting on Shabbos. He says, you know, like, just like strictly speaking from a very, you know, dry halachic evaluation and hierarchy, if we had to rate, we walk into a high school classroom, the averos that are going on, it's okay, so, you know, on a phone, ksiva, drabanan, it's not miskayemis, it's going to disappear. We can come up with a lot of reasons why, you know, I'm not going to say you should text on Shabbos, chas v'shalom. But what about, you know, malbim p'nei chaveiro barabim, ein lo chelek olam haba? Okay, what about onoz devarim? The Gemara in Bava Metzia piles on punishment after punishment and terrible, terrible description of the severity. You insult a person. Serious, serious stuff. Okay, texting on Shabbos, don't do it. But, you know, as it rates for on the Gehenim Shabbo, all right, you know, we'll figure it out. And these are averos even more so. Forgetting where you rate it, you know, in severity, but the type of tshuva that has to be done, like we're saying, for, you know, when you insult another person, it's much more difficult and much more arduous to achieve. So what's the difference? The difference is that if you've done an Avera many times, whether, you know, it doesn't have to be maliciously, but it's something that you've done, by definition, you're desensitized. We're desensitized to Averas that we've done. We're desensitized even to Averas that are in our surroundings. I'll tell you a great story. I think Divrei David came to Yerushalayim later in life from Europe, and the Talmidim noticed after a few months of him being in Yerushalayim, he wasn't leaving his house on Shabbos. And they said, you know, Rebbe, how come you don't come to shul? You don't come daven by the coastal shop? He said, it's very simple. My first Shabbos that I was here, I went outside, and unfortunately I saw a Jew, wasn't observant, it was Michal Shabbos, and I fainted. I fainted. Next Shabbos, I left my house, I saw someone else being Michal Shabbos, and I didn't faint. He said, oy bazoy, if that's the case, that's it. I can't leave my house on Shabbos. He was on such a high spiritual level and with such a lack of exposure. Anyone know what one of the most important works of Hilchos Shabbos ever written? The Sachet Shavu Rebbe, the Eglei Tal? Very important. The Sachet Shavu Rebbe. Okay, the father of the Shem Yishmuel. So he wrote a sefer called the Eglei Tal. And I think he said about himself, the reason he was zochet to write a sefer on Hilchos Shabbos is because his entire life, in the shtetl, he only saw Hilchos Shabbos three times. So he said, I maintained that sensitivity, that feeling of the importance of Shabbos, that I was able to write a sefer because it was so alive and so real, and the importance and the preciousness of the dinim were so tangible to me that I could successfully write a sefer. And not everyone can do that. Rav Schefter told me that his grandchildren living in Eretz Yisrael, if they're walking down the street on Shabbos and they see a car going by, they say, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. So he said to them, why are you saying Mazel Tov? There must be a baby being born, because why else would someone be driving to the hospital on Shabbos? Right, okay, so halavai, we should have the Avos Yisrael and to claim the innocence of people driving down the street on Shabbos, but we have to maintain sensitivity. One final story about this, and I could go on forever, but Rabbi Cohn tells a story, Rabbi Yisrael Cohn, that he was walking down the street one Friday night on Bar-Ilan Street near Shmuel HaNavi. Is I don't want to say notorious, but it's very well known as a location where there's a lot of contention. They blocked the streets and there were protests and rock throwing, etc. So he's walking down the street and there was a bar, Rechol Bar Ilan.
Yeah.
Over, historically, okay.
Well,
okay. So he's walking down the street and a car comes by and this Hasidic Shehid nearby. He says, Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos. Rabbi Cohn walks over to him and says, excuse me, Rabbi, do you think because you're yelling Shabbos at the guy driving the car, all of a sudden he's going to pull over, get out of his car, and make Kiddush right here on the sidewalk? So he said to Rabbi Cohn, no, I'm not yelling for that guy. He listen, he won't listen, I don't know. I'm yelling for myself. I'm yelling for myself. I need to make sure that I don't lose that sensitivity, that I don't lose the feeling of driving a car on Shabbos. It has to affect me. It has to affect me. And if I just ignore it and walk by and I say, oh, chaval, what a shame, then ultimately I'm not going to feel it anymore. And believe it or not, you may not drive a car on Shabbos, but something more subtle, in your own Shmir Shabbos, you don't know how it's going to affect it because you don't have that same Shabbos feeling. So we have to be careful that we don't lose sight of that. And that's what the Kol Dodi is saying, that if a person analyzes the Averos that he's never touched, he's never gone near, and he looks at the Averos, which are unfortunately sometimes part of our society, our civilization, you're going to see that difference. And the way to begin doing tshuva is to take a step back and say, is there anything in my portfolio that I need to be looking at more carefully that I don't even think about because I'm so used to it and it doesn't affect me anymore? Because the more that I'm exposed to it, the less it's going to affect me. And my tshuva has to start from the ground floor. I have to clean out the garbage. Before I start taking on, next year, after a Shana, New Year's resolution, to fast Monday and Thursday, and I'm going to learn Bahasmada 24 hours a day. No, just like start by looking at the things that you may not even realize you need to have that sensitivity to because we're so used to it. And ultimately, when we chip away at that desensitization little by little, causes a tremendous momentum to get where we want to get to B'siyata D'Shmaya.